Happy Friday. This is Ozarks at Large for January 22nd, 2021 on your public radio station 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Ahead this hour, drones delivering goods. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth gives us details, and Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich explains how legislation passed late last year is designed to make experiences better for women using the Veterans Administration. And we'll have our usual Friday conversations with Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics and Becca Martin Brown, the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Stay with KUAF when this Ozarks at Large is finished for this week's Science Friday. Today, what happens when the public gets behind a computer program that can find deadly lead water pipes? There becomes a citizen-led effort to find solutions. How people in Toledo are helping fix a problem with an algorithm. That's on Science Friday today from 1 to 3 on KUAF. Then at 2:04, the latest edition of Scratching the Surface with Dr. Caitlin Ahrens. New cases of COVID-19 in Arkansas are up after decreasing the first part of this week. The Arkansas Department of Health is registering just more than 3,100 confirmed and probable new cases in the most recent testing period. Another 55 Arkansans have died from the virus. Just fewer than 4,500 fatalities from coronavirus have been reported in Arkansas. Benton County reports the most new cases, 360, while Washington County reports the third most, 249, and Sebastian County the fourth most, 217. Hospitalizations from the virus are down a bit by 19 patients. Active cases in the state rose in yesterday's reporting by more than 200. Despite a few recently diagnosed coronavirus cases in the Arkansas House, its speaker says there are no plans to adjust how the chamber conducts business, though leadership is continuing to monitor the situation. Since the session began January 11th, three House members have tested positive for COVID-19. Speaker Matthew Shepard told reporters yesterday they are continuing to speak with public health experts about the situation.
We don't want to have any positive cases. I think, unfortunately, in a group of 100 members plus staff, Just with what's going on, we recognize that there was the likelihood that there would be some positives, and particularly when you consider you're pulling members from across the state of Arkansas.
Additionally, Shepard said he has not been informed of any House members violating the COVID-19 protocols passed last week. Several new books about American art were donated to Bentonville Public Library as part of a unique pilot project to distribute art books to 16 Arkansas libraries. The contribution made possible through a gift by the Alice L. Walton Foundation through the Arkansas State Library and Arkansas Center for the Book in collaboration with Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville. Purpose of the gift is to increase access to content about American art. Over 20 works, valued at more than $1,400, are featured through a special display and available for checkout at the library. Razorback soccer midfielder Taylor Malum was selected by Racing Louisville FC, the latest expansion team in the National Women's Soccer League, yesterday. She'll return for Arkansas's 2021 season, but Racing Louisville FC will retain her league rights. She'll join Arkansas teammate Parker Goins in Louisville after Goins was drafted by the same club as the first pick of the third round in the 2021 soccer draft last week. Malum, by the way, scored 22 goals, dished out 24 assists, and recorded 8 game-winning goals in her Razorback career. Clear tonight, lows between 26 and 32. Saturday's outlook includes increasing cloudiness with highs in the mid-40s. Slight chance of rain Saturday night, lows near 40. And for Sunday, 40% chance of rain in northwest Arkansas, 50% chance of Sunday showers in the Arkansas River Valley. High Sunday afternoon, close to 60 throughout the region. This is Ozarks at Large. Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics discusses a week's worth of news with us in about 5 minutes. John Brown University in Siloam Springs is requiring teachers and students to be tested for COVID-19 prior to the start of the semester. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
The spring semester is already underway for graduate students, but officials have pushed back the start for undergraduate students to February 1st to allow time for people to be tested. The testing requirements is being implemented due to an increase in COVID-19 cases, as well as record hospitalizations at Northwest Arkansas hospitals. Steve Beers, Vice President for Student Development, Athletics, and Facility Services, says they did not require testing prior to the fall semester because the situation was different.
You could say there's an urgency in trying to address the situation that not that it wasn't urgent back in August, but with triple, quadruple the numbers, it's probably even more important now. So the landscape has changed, and not only the landscape of who's been infected and the experiences those people have had, but also the availability of the tests.
Beers says the availability of tests has opened up considerably, but JBU is allowing faculty, staff, and students to sign up for vaccination clinics on January 27th and 28th. Officials have secured 1,000 tests that will be administered for free on those days. All faculty, staff, students, graduate assistants, adjuncts who teach on campus, and vendor employees need to be tested. Beers estimates more than 1,800 members of the campus community will be tested, and he expects some tests will come back positive.
Because we're doing some significant testing, our numbers of infections are going to go up. They almost have to, right? But we believe that that's a good plan, because if we can catch those people and get them great medical attention and help them heal, and they're not on campus infecting others, that's a good plan.
Another benefit to catching positive cases before students arrive on campus is it gives them the opportunity to convalesce at home. For the week of January 9th through the 15th, JBU reported there were 3 active cases among employees and 6 employees were quarantined. For the spring semester, COVID-19 tests must be administered on or after January 25th. Negative tests need to be uploaded to JBU by 2 p.m. January 29th. While a PCR test is preferred because of its accuracy, rapid antigen tests will be accepted. Students who have tested positive in the last 90 days will not be required to be tested prior to arrival, but their results should be reported to JBU. People who do test positive during the week of January 25th should contact the coordinator of student COVID-19 care to discuss when they can return to campus. Beers says JBU officials made adjustments last year that will make it easier for students to transition to online learning if needed.
We embedded in every classroom the ability for any student, even the faculty staff, to remote in, lead class if they're faculty staff, or to remote in as an online student in a temporary or, for that matter, the remaining part of the semester. So in that context, if somebody tests positive or is having difficulty, they can work with their professor and go directly to an online format until they're released by the state.
JBU is also working on immunizing its staff who became eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine January 18th when the state moved to phase 1B of its vaccination plan. Beers says JBU has partnered with a local pharmacy and has a plan in place to vaccinate more than 300 people January 26th, provided they receive enough doses from the state. People who have been vaccinated are still required to be tested for COVID-19 and submit the results to JBU because a person can still become infected after a single dose of the vaccine. More information about COVID-19 testing and vaccination is available at jbu.edu/backtocampus. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And if you'd like to share this or any other story you hear on Ozarks at Large, you can go to OzarksAtLarge.com and find a resource of past stories, features, and interviews. You can also subscribe to our free daily Ozarks at Large email newsletter. We send it to you once a day, every weekday, and list all of that day's elements of the show with links that allow you to listen. The email is free. You can sign up right now at KUAF.com. And you can hear more Antoinette Grajeda each weekday morning at 5:30 and 7:30 with daily newscasts about our region. And you can hear a weekly collection of some of our favorite Ozarks at Large pieces each Sunday morning at 9 on Weekend Ozarks at Large. This Sunday morning, Zuzanna Sitek speaks with Jennifer Dillahay, the state's epidemiologist, about vaccines. Antoinette Grajeda reports on new technology behind those vaccines and what that means for Arkansans. And Jacqueline Froelich asks a veterinarian about coronavirus and our pets. That and more on Weekend Ozarks at Large, Sunday morning at 9 on 91.3 KUAF, your public radio station, for more than 35 years.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. KUAF is supported by the Farmer's Table Cafe, currently offering a local foods grocery delivery and pickup, open online every Friday through Sunday. Shop farmerstable.com for more.
This is Ozarks at Large, and joining me now from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics. Michael, welcome back to Ozarks at Large.
Thanks for having me. It's I think Wednesday was kind of my New Year's Day. I don't know if it was for you, but I'm much better mood and glad to be with you today.
Well, good. You always seem to be in a pretty good mood. Let's start with something that began in the old year and has now changed in the new year, and that is what had been a planned alcohol tax increase for some businesses that serve booze in Fort Smith. It passed once 5-2. Now it's almost been, if not unanimously, rejected by the same people who put it in. Help me understand what happened.
Yeah, this is almost from the department of what the hell were you thinking? Yes, in December last year in 2020, gosh, that's weird to say, but Fort Smith board approved by a 5-2 vote, and it was recommended by the city administrator, Carl Gefkin, which is puzzling we can talk about, but to raise the supplemental alcohol tax on private clubs by 5%. It would raise another $500,000 a year, and it would raise that up. It's already 5% now. It raised it up to 10%, and it was not supposed to go into effect until later in 2021, later this year. Obviously, the restaurants and clubs, and even folks not in the restaurant and club business, kind of push back against it. You know, said, "What are you thinking? This industry has been the most hardest hit, and even if the vaccine rollout goes better than we think, and people are, which it's not, but it does, and people are vaccinated and they're back out, this industry is still going to struggle. A lot of projections suggest it won't be back on its feet for another 2 to 3 years. Why are you going to hit them with the tax? Surely they pass that on to customers, but you don't want to do anything that makes it more difficult for them to bring in business." So there was a lot of pushback against this. And to their credit, they took it up again on January 19th, this Tuesday, and unanimously voted to repeal that tax. So, I mean, good for them for doing that. I think you had Director Kevin Settle, who even admitted that he was wrong, said, "Hey, you know, sometimes what we do is we need to be open to hear from our citizens, and we make our case when we were right, and when citizens make the case that we're wrong, we need to listen to them." So, that was Director Neil Martin. Now, Neil Martin opposed it. He and Director George Katsapas opposed it originally, but several directors came around and said, "Yeah, we were wrong on that." So, good for them. I'm not sure how the city will make up that revenue if they need to, but thankfully they passed that. If anything, if I was a city director or a city administrator in almost any city in Arkansas, I would be looking for ways to provide tax relief to that particular sector of the economy and not adding taxes onto them.
But as you said, perhaps the best thing that came out of this was a civic entity listening to the population and reversing.
Although, I mean, and I've talked to a few folks in the industry, and they, I think they're glad that they reversed the decision, but I think they're still a little miffed that they even had to go and, you know, to them, it just seems like such a no-brainer. I mean, why would you have even gone down this path in the first place? So I think there's still a little bit of that, you got to be kidding me, and maybe some hurt feelings, but hopefully that'll subside.
No surprise that traffic at Fort Smith Regional Airport was down in 2020. Airport traffic was down around the world, but now we have some concrete figures. What are they?
Yeah, 60% traffic was down. Well, it's 59.6%, but I think we can call that 60% in 2020. And it's just, again, you said no surprise, business and tourism travel just fell off. In April, falling off. And it's kind of a shame for the Fort Smith Regional Airport. They're on a four consecutive years of growth in January and February numbers, and I think even the March numbers, but certainly the January and February numbers were showing growth. They were set up for a fifth year of growth out there, which not only good for the airport, but I think anyone will tell you what a regional airport or any airport is growing in traffic, that's a good sign for the economy, the associated economy. But it just fell off, and it's not that big of a surprise. You know, the X&A ended the year down 61%, and it looks like the Little Rock, the Bill and Hillary Clinton National Airport in Little Rock, will be down near 60% also. So it's not just Fort Smith; it's pretty much across the board. And even if you look at national data for the first 9 months of the year, the federal data, which is the most recent data available, they have domestic enplanements down a little over 65%. Mm. So not that it's any consolation, but I think the Fort Smith Regional Airport, their percentage declines a little bit better than the average, but they would probably like to see it get up. Now, one of the concerns, I talked to Airport Director Michael Griffin. They have 15 employees at the airport. Fortunately, they've not had to lay anybody off. Earlier this year, they received almost $12 million in that CARES Act funding that went to state and local governments and organizations like airports to kind of not only to keep them in business and help make payroll, but to adjust in terms of safety protocols and that type of thing. And one other hit, and I'll quit with this, Delta pulled their service out in September. They were supposed to bring it back, but they have not only have they not brought their service back, but they've removed the gate, all of their facilities. So right now it's just American Airlines flying in and out of Fort Smith.
Well, if fewer people are flying, maybe more are driving RVs across the country. And if they are, sometime next year, they may be able to park along the Arkansas River.
Yep. And you're still king of the Segway. I like that. Let's continue. Yes, the Central Business Improvement District in downtown Fort Smith has approved an RV, recreational vehicle park plan, along the river, just a little bit north of where the Marshall's Museum is, but it's near downtown Fort Smith. Now, the plan still has to go to the Fort Smith Board of Directors, but it's about a $2.5 million project, 27 acres. I have a little over 100 paved RV spaces, 12 tent spaces, 11 swimming pool, restroom facilities, a playground to be set in a park-like setting. And I'll also have a manager who lives there. So, I don't know about you, Cal, but when I grew up, sometimes RV parks weren't the most clean or preferred place to stay. But that's really changed over the years. And in this year of the pandemic, RV sales have grown through the roof, have shot through the roof, and a lot of analysts who watch that market think that that trend will continue even if things return to normal. I think they discovered that people, instead of, for example, maybe as we just talked about, instead of the hassle of flying, they said, you know what, let's get an RV, let's travel the country and see it. And so other research suggests that people who do travel by RV are people with disposable income. Those are the type of tourists you want to bring you to town, because they're going to park the RV, maybe get an Uber ride into your restaurants and bars. And since this is close to downtown Fort Smith, it can help that area also. But yeah, hopefully sometime later this year, early next year, there'll be a nice, well-adorned RV park near the downtown area.
And in just the few seconds we have left, there was last week, another job announcement in Fort Smith, this one from Mars Pet. That's good news for the economy in the River Valley.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that too. You had iTroll about a week before. Now Mars Pet Care is expanding, $145 billion expansion, about 100 and something more jobs. So two big boosts to the manufacturing sector. And if there's any sector in the Fort Smith Metro that's taken, well, the manufacturing sector has taken the biggest hit, not only just because of the pandemic, but really since about 2006, 2008 when Whirlpool pulled out. But yeah, good news for the manufacturing sector, several hundred jobs, and they're good paying jobs too. Yeah. That's welcome. I've been told that maybe that's not the end of it, so we'll keep our fingers crossed for the economy.
All right. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. We talk to him almost every Friday. Michael, have a good week, and we will connect next Friday.
All right. Thank you, sir.
That's Kenny Drew in the background doing Paul's Pal. And I'm Robert Ginsburg, your host for Shades of Jazz. We'll hear more from Kenny Drew, as well as Duke Jordan, Jaco Pastorius, James Hall, and much more. Tune in this Friday and Saturday for Shades of Jazz, right here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. This weekend on the TED Radio Hour, anyone from anywhere can give a TED Talk. This weekend, curator Chloe Sasha Brooks, who leads a massive search each year to discover brilliant speakers who often fly under the radar, will share some of those speakers. The TED Radio Hour, Sunday afternoon at 1 on KUAF. A dozen Arkansas properties are being added to the National Register of Historic Places. The Arkansas Historic Preservation Program released the list, which includes a few places in our region: the Bella Vista Country Club, the United Hebrew Congregation Tillis Temple in Fort Smith, and the Morrow Farmstead in rural Washington County, now all on the National Register. Arkansas's State Review Board meets three times a year to make nominations to that list. And so from the past to the future, the Jones Center in Springdale is announcing a new Phase 2 community engagement survey in an effort to receive opinions about a redesign of the 52-acre campus. The Jones Trust received grant funding through the Walton Family Foundation Design Excellence Program last year to help create a campus in alignment with the Springdale Downtown Revitalization Master Plan. The first phase of the survey gathered about 700 responses. This second phase includes requests for thoughts centered on such things as connection to downtown, cultural diversity, and a relationship to the Razorback Greenway. Survey is available in Spanish, English, and Marshallese at thejonescenter.net/take the survey. From curbside pickup and delivery to personal shoppers, supermarkets are always thinking of new ways to reach people. Now, Walmart is asking some customers to look to the sky for that next package. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth explains.
It may sound like something out of science fiction, miniature planes dropping your groceries by parachute at your doorstep, but for select Northwest Arkansas residents, that reality isn't that far off. Walmart is opening a test site for its new drone delivery program at one of its neighborhood market locations in Pea Ridge. Earlier this month, the city's planning commission approved an auxiliary permit for the company to operate a launch hub at 240 Slack Street. Tom Ward, senior vice president for customer product at Walmart, says the program is the next step in providing more convenient and flexible services to customers.
But if you imagine what it would feel like to think, oh, I need this item, and be able to pull out the app and order something, and then, you know, within minutes of that completed order, have that item float down into your driveway or whatever it might be that you choose as the location. You know, that's a very different way that we can bring convenience and great priced items to our customers.
Ward says Walmart is partnering with drone manufacturing company Zipline to provide and manage the drones, which look like small planes and have a flight radius of up to 50 miles.
You know, essentially speaking, we're gonna take this store that we've selected out there in Pea Ridge. We're going to build out a platform on that store with our partner Zipline. And this is a really innovative technology that actually has a fixed-wing drone that will take off from that site, deliver the package, and then actually fly its way back to the site to send the next one.
Walmart launched a similar delivery program in North Carolina in September and started looking into automated piloting technology as far back as 2015, even using some drones to check warehouse inventory. But he says this technology from Zipline is different.
And what's unique about the Zipline technology is that the drone doesn't actually land. It actually deploys the product that the customer has purchased And that actually floats to the ground using a biodegradable parachute. So if you imagine, you know, you could come out and maybe it's your backyard or your driveway or whatever it looks like, and you can see this package floating its way down to the ground for you to collect in a matter of minutes.
And spurred on by social distancing and the pandemic, other companies are latching on to delivery by drone as well. Amazon, probably Walmart's biggest rival, got approval from the Federal Aviation Administration in fall of 2020 to operate as a drone airline in the U.S. But the FAA has also set out new guidelines that will make it easier for Walmart and other retailers to expand drone use, including allowing the unmanned services to fly over populated areas at night without a waiver and requiring remote identification that can broadcast data to authorities without the use of internet. Think of a kind of digital license plate for drones. The FAA submitted those new rules to the Federal Register back in December and are expected to go into effect in February. So as drone delivery becomes more common, word says the Pea Ridge test site is important because it helps Walmart and Zipline better understand this technology and its limits.
How do people treat the technology? You know, what kind of information do people want to understand? And, you know, and then how do they interact with the packaging? What's the best route for us to use? And equally, how does the store work as well? You know, this is a really innovative technology. And so we'll build the processes both for our store associates that will be, you know, partnering with Zipline at the store and then understanding, you know, how our customers feel about these kind of technologies as they get off the ground.
He says for now, Walmart's drones, which can carry up to 4 pounds, will only deliver what he calls health and wellness products.
Yeah, so we're going to focus on things that are what we call over-the-counter. So things that you can go into the store and buy, but it might be things that you want more quickly, whatever it is, but not necessarily Rx items that, to your point, would carry some restrictions. That's something we've got to take some time to figure out. And so for now, to get things going, we'll focus on just regular over-the-counter type items.
He says participating customers in Pea Ridge will be able to receive drone deliveries at no added cost, but that may change if and when the service is broadened.
For now, you know, we don't plan to pass these costs on in the test format, so we want to make sure that we get the learnings first, understand how customers interact with the technology, and then as this becomes, you know, potentially a more scalable solution, that's something we'll have to think through.
Ward says Pea Ridge customers can expect that drone delivery service to begin sometime later this spring. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Daniel Carruth.
On January 5th, landmark Women Veterans Benefits legislation was signed into law. The Deborah Sampson Act is an omnibus bill intended to remove barriers to and improve women veterans' medical care. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich recently spoke with the Women Veteran Program Manager at the Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks to bring us this story.
Roseanne Harris, RN, is Women Veteran Program Manager at the Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks Medical Center.
Here in Fayetteville, and I help support about 4,500 women veterans within our catchment area.
The catchment area covers women veterans living in 23 counties in northwest Arkansas, southwest Missouri, and eastern Oklahoma. The VA operates community-based outpatient clinics in Fort Smith, Harrison, Ozark, also Branson, Springfield, and Joplin, Missouri, as well as Jay, Oklahoma. Since 1935, the Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks has been providing high-quality care to veterans, and Harris says the Women's Health Program Division is proactive, whole health-oriented, and expanding.
Not only do we provide a lot of well-being programs like health coaching and mindfulness, nutrition, and weight management, peer support, smoking programs, physical therapy, chiropractic, and then women's health related. Our primary care providers are really doing just comprehensive women's health, which does include preventive care, such as mammograms, pap smears, colonoscopy, gender-specific care, such as birth control or family planning, preconception counseling, maternity and newborn care.
Primary care, including diagnostic, surgical, psychological, and rehabilitation, are available to women vets, as well as COVID-19 care presently.
It impacts every part of your life, and so just the stress of having to figure out a plan for your family, you know, and those types of things really do put a stress on women. And then, of course, you know, COVID and pregnancy, and those things can really be very hard. So we have two mental health care providers who are working specifically with our women to help support them.
Like all U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs medical centers, VHSO is offering COVID-19 vaccinations to eligible veterans. And on January 15th, landmark federal legislation known as the Deborah Sampson Act was signed into law. The bill eliminates barriers to care and services many women veterans face and helps to ensure the VA can address the needs of women veterans who are more likely to face homelessness, unemployment, and lack of access to needed health care. Harris is already planning for implementation proposals.
The VA will be given about $1 million to help support efforts at each facility to improve our privacy and welcoming environment. And so that's something that's going to be happening because we do want women to trust the VA and feel comfortable in the environment so that they will, you know, choose VA and get their care here.
Maternity care will also expand, she says, under the measure.
Increased newborn benefits will be part of this bill. Right now, we have newborn benefits are only 7 days, and so that will be expanded. Additionally, part of this bill is that there's going to be childcare at all of our VA sites within the next 5 years. And so there's going to be a lot of regulations that need to change, and people in Washington need to be figuring out how they're going to implement all of these changes.
Harris says women comprise the fastest growing group of American veterans, numbering roughly 2 million nationwide. The bill also enhances education, pensions, burials, financial compensations, as well as medical benefits to women veterans.
Congress has recently given the Women Veteran Program $50 million for this fiscal year. And so what I did is I submitted a grant proposal to hire staff here at VHSO to help support the women's program. And so with that money, we are hiring a program support assistant and also a reproductive health clinical pharmacy specialist. And so someone who understands women's health and understands, you know, the medication and how it affects women. Also someone who would be following, you know, our contraception and our hormone replacement and our infertility medications. And there's a lot of things that they can do to help support our maternity care program and ensuring that women of childbearing age don't have medications that would affect the pregnancy should they get pregnant. And so these are all very important health standards that we need to be improving.
Harris says half of enrolled women at VHSO live in rural areas, so she's raised grant funding to pay a registered nurse to provide them maternity care and women's health care coordination. She encourages all women veterans to enroll for health care with the Veterans Health Care System of the Ozarks.
So what we really want you to do is call your primary care team, call your mental health provider, and just reach out to us. We'll schedule you an appointment. And, you know, we'll get you taken care of. So it's just really exciting time here for our Women Veteran Program. So I'm just honored to be able to help, you know, drive this positive change.
To learn more about the Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks, visit fayetteville.va.gov. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
President Joe Biden signed several executive orders and memos on his first day in office, and a number of them pertain to immigration reform. That same day, the United States Department of Homeland Security issued a memorandum directing DHS components to review immigration enforcement policies and set interim policies for civil enforcement. DHS issued a 100-day pause on deportations of certain non-citizens that goes into effect today. During a virtual press conference yesterday, Mireya Reith, executive director of Arkansas United, said the change will be incredibly helpful for undocumented Arkansans.
So it's important that our community talk with their attorneys to make sure that they understand what goes on. But at least for 100 days, we should see a major decline in deportations in ways that allow our community to connect with attorneys and other legal advocates to be able to make sure that they are on the best pathway possible to staying here. And that is the most hope that we have seen in many, many years for our immigrant community.
One of President Biden's memos calls on the Secretary of Homeland Security, in consultation with the Attorney General, to preserve and fortify the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, program. This was welcome news for Carla Palma, a DACA recipient and community organizer for Arkansas United, who's based in Fort Smith.
Everything from yesterday was just a celebration, not just in my community, but in others. I feel like it was definitely a day of hope and a new beginning.
Palma is studying to become a nurse, and after graduation, she'll be able to earn her nursing license thanks to the passage of legislation in 2019 that allows the Arkansas Board of Nursing to grant licenses to DACA recipients. Palma says efforts are underway to pass similar legislation for DACA recipients who want to become licensed teachers.
But we need to keep pushing because the DACA recipients and dreamers here in Arkansas have so much potential and such a drive to continue their education and to work professionally in the field of their choice. And we're hoping that we can push for something here statewide, or hoping that something can be done at a federal level.
President Biden is expected to introduce an immigration proposal in the coming days that, according to NPR, would provide a path to citizenship for an estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants living in the United States.
Support for KUAF comes from the Walmart Museum on the Square in downtown Bentonville. Scheduled visits are welcomed daily from noon to 6 p.m. WalmartMuseum.com to reserve your visit or for more information.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me via Zoom from her home office in Bella Vista is Becca Martin Brown, features editor of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Welcome back, Becca.
I was going to pop in and be all cheerful about it. It's a shiny new year, and so the folks in features at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette have some shiny new stuff.
Yeah.
And then we fought with your shiny new technology for
yes.
30 minutes. So maybe I'll just shut up.
Every time you get a new setup, not everything works quite like you want it to, but we're connected now.
We're here. Yes. And we do have some shiny new things going on in
okay.
the paper. One of them started Thursday, and it's about food.
Oh, okay.
But it's not about recipes so much as about the conversation about food.
Mm-hmm.
And about chefs and about trends and about people who influence food. And the timing was just serendipitously perfect, because the first person featured was Kat Robinson.
She's great. She's written several books about Arkansas and food. Yeah.
Okay, the rest of us are like trying to figure out how to work at home. She did a no-contact cooking show for Arkansas PBS last year.
Right.
Collected recipes being made by people in her social media feed for a book called 43 Tables, an Internet Community Cooks During Quarantine. And then took a deep dive into her memories and her collection of cookbooks to write A Bite of Arkansas, A Cookbook of Natural State Delights, which comes out in softcover January 26th.
Oh, that's next week.
That was after she started her own publishing house. She's really fascinating because she just loves the concept of Arkansas food and how it reflects who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And weirdly, it kind of started because when she was in college, she joined the Society for Creative Anachronism. which, you know, I've played in for 100 years.
Right.
But she studied food, like medieval food.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so then it got her interested in modern food, and it's just fun. And the book will be, even if you don't cook, the book will be a lot of fun. And if you do cook, well, get with it and send me some.
Right.
You can get it through her publishing house, which she calls Tonti Press, as in Henry de Tonti.
Oh.
As in the first traveler around Arkansas, because normally she would be out traveling and writing about food, but there's this pandemic thing and,
right,
you know, no fun is being had by anyone. So you can have fun at home, or you can find more about her book at Tie-Dye Travels, which is the blog she's had for years. And of course, you can find Thursday Story at nwadg.com. You might see a theme here, because another thing we wanted to talk more about this year is books.
Mm-hmm.
The theme being what got you through the pandemic, right?
I see, right.
So we started a Sunday book column, and this week one of my colleagues, Courtney Lanning, was thrilled to interview Charlaine Harris.
Oh, don't tell me she is, don't tell me, Becca, she wrote True Blood and other sort of related books.
Yes, her Southern Vampire books became the True Blood TV series. And we claim her as an Arkansan because she lived around Magnolia for a lot of years. She's in Texas now.
Okay.
But she's written this, she's on the third book of a new series set in an alternate historical timeline in the United States after President Franklin Roosevelt, was assassinated.
You know, there was an attempt on his life in Florida.
Right.
But because the assassin was on a wobbly chair, it didn't take place. So I guess she's launching as if this did happen.
Yeah. And it means that the Russians made a grab for land, and Mexico and Canada took land. And so Arkansas and its neighboring states are in the middle of a new Wild West.
Hmm.
Where the heroine of the story is a 19-year-old female gunslinger.
So this is still set in the, I guess, 1930s or
yeah.
So. Okay.
So you can read more about that Sunday in the profiles section. For those of you who are looking for actual arts reporting here, yes, we have that too.
Okay.
Theater Squared has Schoolgirls currently open.
Virtually.
If you haven't tried the streaming theater, we said this last week, don't be afraid of it, because it will feel like theater and it will make you so happy.
And that's
besides
a good
that,
thing.
You can watch any time of day you want to.
Oh, right. So if I get home at 3 p.m, I want to watch it then, and I've done the things I need to do, I can watch it then?
Exactly. You go on theater2.org, you make your reservation, and then you can watch it at midnight, or you can watch it at 2, or you can watch it whenever.
I see.
And it's on until February 14th. So you can buy it now and say, I'm going to watch it on the 14th with my sweetheart.
I got you.
Tickets are $20 for one person or $35 for a family at theater2.org. Now, if you want to go look at visual art, there's a new working studio and gallery space in Fayetteville.
Tell me more.
It's at 19 East Mountain, and the artist is named Karen Spencer. And she's been downtown in some other locations, but she wanted her own studio. And she does beautiful oil paintings. And all you have to do is get a hold of her at KarenSpencerFineArt.com, and you can go see her at work and see her paintings. You can also go by and see stuff in the window, but you can't just drop in because it's her studio. And then if you're looking ahead for other things to look forward to in 2021, we're going to have a bunch of those too. And one of the first ones is the Bella Vista Historical Museum, which is working on its projects for 2021, which include rescuing a bunch of cemeteries.
Rescuing cemeteries?
Yeah, they've started with working on cleanup and getting markers made and doing things like that for cemeteries in Bella Vista. They took on Summit Cemetery last year, which is in the Metfield area of Bella Vista, if you know Bella Vista. And they've got 1, 2, 3 more on the list that they hope to do this year. And then coming in April, they also have a new pictorial history book from Arcadia Publishing about 100 years of Bella Vista.
Oh, all right. It's
Which
changed.
Which is really kind of fascinating if you don't know that Bella Vista used to be a tourist destination.
Exactly.
So we got more stuff for you, and we'll keep it coming.
And, of course, you can pick up what's up in the Sunday paper. You can do it digitally, but the Sunday paper is still printed, so you could do that as well.
Yes, you can still have what's up to hold in your hands and put on your coffee table.
Exactly. And then refer,
we like it there.
And refer to it all week.
You should be able to refer to it for a couple of weeks at this point.
That's a good point. Becca Martin Brown, features editor of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Becca, talk to you next Friday.
After an inauguration like no other, President Biden signs a flurry of executive orders. We'll look at what's to come. And the cross-cultural recordings of Zakir Hussain, master Indian percussionist, released some 50 years later. Those stories and all the news Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition tomorrow morning from 7 to 9 on 91.3 KUAF. You can find a complete schedule of all the great weekend programs on KUAF by going to KUAF.com. As part of its Engage Arkansas initiative, which aims to re-engage students who have struggled to adjust to shifts in learning during the pandemic, the Arkansas Department of Education has launched a statewide community resources portal. Missy Wally, who is the director of special projects at ADE, says this is another way to remove any barriers standing in the way of a student's education.
And as we were going through that process, we realized, you know, we really need a resource because so many of these wraparound services are provided at schools. And when students are virtual, it's hard to get these wraparound services to them. So this is just another avenue for parents to be able to access the wraparound services that are offered in their community.
Wally says ADE also found that access to technology wasn't usually the problem. Instead, many students and parents had a problem understanding how to use it or didn't have reliable access to the internet.
So that's really where it started was I may not have Wi-Fi or I may need some instructions on how to use technology. So we were reaching out to the community and saying, where can they go maybe to a faith-based organization and access your Wi-Fi or have a place to work on that? And it just one thing led to another, and we just started adding resources.
Now, Wally says the portal includes nearly 2,000 organizations and 32 different categories of community services.
It offers things such as abuse and neglect for food pantries, free and low-cost dental services, legal services, medical services, clothing assistance, counseling, mental health services, transportation assistance, libraries, military resources, housing assistance, homeless shelters. There's several categories as part of the resource, and really it's growing every day.
Services can be filtered by region, by county, and by category. Wally says community organizations that want to be added to the list can submit an application on the portal website and will be included once the ADE vets the information.
Families are suffering right now, and several students are having to work. So they're doing their school at night, virtual school at night. So any way that we can offer support to help remove some of those barriers, we're going to try to do that.
And the portal will remain up beyond the pandemic. There are two ways to access the service on the ADE website. One is to click the E at the top of the homepage, then select Engage Arkansas. The portal can also be found using the ADE Data Center. We've also put a link to the page at ozarksatlarge.com. On Monday's Ozarks at Large, a conversation with retired General Wesley Clark.
You start by looking at the challenges that President Biden will face. And those challenges are both at home and abroad. They start with the pandemic, with a very high rate of unemployment. They continue with a very fractured group of people in politics in the United States. I think the people are more fractured than the, or less fractured than the politicians, to be honest with you. But the politicians are pretty hardcore going after each other. And then you have a series of challenges from abroad.
General Wesley Clark will speak to the University of Arkansas community virtually on Tuesday. On Monday's show, we'll talk to him about politics and what's next. That's on Monday's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF.
For the Central Arkansas Library System, I'm Mark Chris with an Encyclopedia of Arkansas Minute. Little Rock's Ann Gillis had a brief but busy career that saw her act in 39 movies between 1934 and 1947. Born Alma Mabel Counter on February 12, 1927, her mother moved to Hollywood 7 years later, changed her daughter's name to Ann Gillis, and got her an agent. Her career consisted of small roles in big movies and big roles in small films. Gillis hit her stride in 1936 when she worked in 7 movies, and she would appear with such stars as Myrna Loy, Marlena Dietrich, Gary Cooper, Gene Autry, and Roy Rogers. Her only starring role was as Little Orphan Annie in 1938, though she later said they probably erased it because it was pretty dreadful. She retired at age 20, saying, "I called a halt to a life I hadn't chosen and didn't enjoy." She came out of retirement in 1967 for a brief appearance in 2001 A Space Odyssey, later calling director Stanley Kubrick a real jerk. Gillis lived in Europe and enjoyed painting and playing music until her death in England in 2018. To learn more, visit encyclopediaofarkansas.net.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and War Eagle. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. Contributors to the show today included Antoinette Grajeda, who also prepared the news from yesterday's press conference with Arkansas United, Daniel Carruth, Jacqueline Froelich, and Zuzanna Sitek, who delivered news about the Arkansas Department of Education portal for students and parents. Timothy Dennis produced today's show. Our thanks to Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics for his help this Friday, as well as to Becca Martin Brown, features editor with the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, for helping out. Mark Christ delivers new dispatches from the Encyclopedia of Arkansas for us every month, and we appreciate that. We are back with you Sunday morning at 9 for this week's Weekend Ozarks at Large, and we return with a new week of daily programs beginning Monday at noon and 7 p.m. Monday's show will include our conversation with retired General Wesley Clark in advance of his virtual talk sponsored by the University of Arkansas Honors College, and our next Pryor Center archival tour. On Monday, we'll focus on the life of Arkansan Maurice Footsie Britt, a former lieutenant governor of Arkansas who earned every major armed services medal for his service in World War II and was an outstanding football player with the Arkansas Razorbacks and the Detroit Lions. Randy Dixon will join me Monday. And our Tuesday program next week will include the next edition of our podcast, The Movement That Never Was, A People's Guide to Anti-Racism in the South and Arkansas. Our next public discussion associated with that podcast will be hosted virtually by the Fayetteville Public Library Thursday night at 6. You're invited to join us. You can go to the events page at faylib.org for more information about Thursday night's panel discussion. Again, open to the public. Thanks so much for being with us on this Friday. You can always join us on your schedule by subscribing to our absolutely free podcast. It's available for each of the daily shows through any of the major podcast distributors. You can learn more about us at KUAF.com. And finally, thanks for everything, Hammer and Hank Aaron, one of the best ever. You'll be missed.